Chapter 9, The Phantom Menace. Coruscant, 10 years ago, 2 years after the liberation of Naboo. From the windows of the Supreme Chancellor's 500 Republica apartments, Obi-Wan could see the familiar spires of the Jedi Temple clearly in the distance. This close, he could feel it, too, a comforting oasis of warmth and calm in the Force that part of him wanted nothing more than to relax into. Small, strong arms wrapped around his waist from behind, as the Queen leaned her head against the back of his shoulder. "You've been standing here for 20 minutes, Padme murmured. "Is everything all right?" Obi-Wan dragged his gaze away from the temple and turned to press a kiss to her forehead.
"Just old memories," he said.
He glanced at the chrono on the mantel over the ornamental fireplace, then swore.
"I've got to go."
"That's when I came to tell you," Padme said. She wasn't required in court today, so she was dressed simply in a gown that began with the star-scattered blue of deep space near the hem and shaded into white at her shoulders, her small hands nearly lost amidst her flowing sleeves. Not expecting visitors, she hadn't bothered with the royal face paint, softening her features and accentuating the youthfulness that the makeup usually concealed. I had one of the guards bring a speeder over, so he wouldn't have to go all the way to the speeder bays. Obi-Wan nodded, patting his pockets to make sure the data chip was there. His fingers brushed the hilt of his lightsaber, and he paused, looking down at it. "Obi-Wan." Padme laid a hand on his arm, and he started and raised his head to peer at her worried face. "They won't try anything, will they? To keep you here?" He blinked at her in surprise.
"Why would they do that?"
"Well, they never wanted you to leave the Order," she said. "I know Yoda came to argue you out of it."
"That was 2 years ago," Obi-Wan said slowly. "They wouldn't have me now. Besides, I've resigned. I've done nothing wrong, and they have no right to hold me."
What he didn't say was that if the Jedi Council suddenly decided that he had violated galactic law in some way, they had ultimate jurisdiction over him as a former Jedi and as a Force user. The Jedi Temple, like the Nemoidian Purse Worlds or the Banking Clan Fortresses, was sovereign territory where the Republic had only the most cursory of jurisdiction. She leaned up to kiss him. "Be careful," she said. "Chancellor Palpatine said that there's a rumor the Trade Federation has hired bounty hunters to keep us from testifying."
"If that's true, then those bounty hunters are in for an unwelcome surprise," Obi-Wan said.
He gripped her fingers for a moment, then made his way to the balcony speeder dock. It wasn't the first time Obi-Wan had left the Supreme Chancellor's apartments since they had arrived on Coruscant. He'd been to the courts every day for the past week, as well as sitting in on several Senate sessions with Padme and the senator from Naboo. But it was the first time that he had gone alone. Obi-Wan hadn't realized how used he'd become to having a guardsman or two at his back, but he wouldn't take a personal guard into the Jedi Temple even if he had thought there was a need for it. Padme's fears aside, which hadn't manifested until Chancellor Palpatine had dropped a few worried remarks over dinner last night, Obi-Wan would be in less danger in the Jedi Temple than he was anywhere else in Coruscant, even 500 Republica. It wasn't as though he had anything to fear from the Jedi, after all.
The speeder he was piloting was an expensive rental, light and responsive to the touch. It took Obi-Wan a moment to get a feel for Coruscant air traffic again. By training and temperament, he drove a speeder like a starfighter, which led to a lot of shouting and honking until he dove into a different skyline that would take him almost directly to the Jedi Temple. He reduced his speed when a traffic droid stationed at the edge of the skyline blinked warningly at him, settling into the flow of traffic. A tremor in the Force caught his attention. Obi-Wan hadn't let his attention lapse, not in the skylanes of Coruscant, where a single moment of hesitation could get him splattered up and down 4 miles of skyscrapers. But for a few minutes, he had been paying attention to his speeder and not to his own security. He didn't bother glancing at the speeder's displays, which were decent for a civilian speeder but didn't have anything on his N1 starfighter. Instead, he reached out with the Force, seeking for the source of the disturbance he had sensed. A dark presence. Not the echoing, hollow blackness of the Sith, but something more mundane, following him several speeder lengths back. Obi-Wan didn't know whether it was some bounty hunter hired by the Trade Federation, a Senate guard assigned by the Supreme Chancellor, Republic spec ops wary of a rogue Jedi on the loose, or someone new. But he could tell that whoever it was didn't have any personal interest in him, merely professional interest. That didn't mean anything. Besides the Trade Federation, who never did any of their own dirty work, the only personal enemies he had were back on Naboo. Obi-Wan was expected at the Jedi Temple, so he couldn't do any fancy flying tricks to lose his tail, even if it wasn't essentially a straight shot there from 500 Republica. He reached down one-handed to undo the strap on his sidearm's holster, knowing that in the air a blaster would do him more good than his lightsaber if it came to shooting. Aside from that, there wasn't anything else he could do except continue on to the temple. When he got close enough and turned out of the main skylanes, the temple security grid tagged the identichip in his speeder, transmitting a request for further identification. Obi-Wan sent it. A few moments later, he received an acknowledgement and instruction to land in the East Visitor Speeder Bay. When Obi-Wan had been living here, there had always been visitors in the temple, usually scholars using the archives, occasionally guests from the handful of other Force disciplines in the Republic. It wasn't exactly easy to get an invitation to visit the temple, but it wasn't impossible either. There should have been a dozen other speeders in the East Visitor Bay. Instead, it was empty, except for a pair of knights waiting by the inner door. Obi-Wan hesitated for an instant when he saw them, but by then the bay doors were already closing behind his speeder, trapping him inside. He brought his speeder down in the empty space closest to the bay doors out of habit. It wasn't that he expected to have to make a quick getaway. It was just that, by now, he had learned that it was better to be prepared than to be dead. He took a few minutes longer than necessary to shut off all the speeder systems and refasten the strap on his holster, since the last thing he wanted to do was walk around the Jedi Temple with an unsecured weapon that would, by virtue of their location, be viewed with more suspicion than his lightsaber. When he couldn't come up with any more excuses to delay, he popped the canopy and vaulted out, landing lightly on the permacrete floor. Next to the two knights, who had come over while he was shutting down his speeder, he was uncomfortably aware of how out of place he was in his civilian clothes and blaster belt, lightsaber or not. He knew both of them, since they were within a few years of each other in age, and had trained together as younglings and junior Padawans. Of the two, Quinlan Vos was the most senior, having been knighted about 5 years earlier. Luminara Unduli had taken her trials while Obi-Wan had been trapped during the occupation. Obi-Wan hadn't seen either of them since before he and Qui-Gon had been sent to Naboo. Quinlan's gaze swept Obi-Wan up and down, his expression considering. Even though he was entitled to wear the Naboo Royal Guard uniform, Obi-Wan seldom did, unless the occasion called for it. On the rare occasion that he did, which mostly involved him blending in with the rest of the Queen's security forces, he couldn't wear his lightsaber openly, which usually did more to dissuade most threats than any number of guardsmen could. Naboo had careful gradations of fashion based on occasion, location, season, and for all he could tell, phases of the moons. Most of his time on Coruscant had been spent in what Padme called pearl wear, appropriate for appearances in court, and the few social occasions they had attended. For his visit to the temple, Obi-Wan was wearing what he would normally wear around the Theed Royal Palace. Comfortable, but formal enough that, as Padme's handmaidens put it, he didn't embarrass the Queen when they were seen in public together. It was enough for Obi-Wan to wish longingly for the simplicity of the Jedi uniform. If Quinlan's gaze lingered for a moment on Obi-Wan's holstered sidearm, which, beside his lightsaber, was the only other weapon visible, it was brief enough that Obi-Wan could almost convince himself that he had imagined it. Obi-Wan found himself holding his breath, resisting the urge to speak first. At last, Quinlan nodded, apparently satisfied with whatever he saw. "Looking good, Obi-Wan," he said. "Getting laid on a regular basis is obviously doing wonders for that stick up your..." Obi-Wan laughed in sheer delight. "Oh, I see you haven't changed at all." And let Quinlan pull him into a hug, thumping his fists against his old friend's back. "You all right?" Quinlan murmured against his ear, too low for Luminara to overhear. Obi-Wan nodded very slightly. Then Quinlan pulled back and held him at arm's length, looking him over again. "You wouldn't believe some of the ferglets I've heard about you since I got back from deep cover on Tatooine." "None of it is true," Obi-Wan said. Realized he had no idea what the rumors in question were, and corrected. "Well, most of it isn't anyway." When Quinlan released him, Luminara stepped forward to hug him. "How has civilian life been treating you, Obi-Wan?" she asked, after she had let him go, and the three of them had started toward the inner doors, which led into the temple proper. Obi-Wan considered the question. "It's more exciting than I would have thought 4 years ago," he said at last, since his first month as a civilian had begun with no less than 3 assassination attempts, 2 on the Queen and 1 on himself, all from disgruntled members of the Naboo nobility. Padme and Panaka had both assured him that that wasn't typical. Considering the events of the past 2 years, Obi-Wan wasn't convinced. He was also fairly certain that Padme and Panaka had changed their minds about that after Sabe, in one of her appearances as Amidala, had taken a blaster bolt in the shoulder. "How has knighthood been treating you?" "Less exciting than I expected 4 years ago," Luminara said. "Though I suspect Quinlan wouldn't agree." Quinn grinned, showing his teeth. "You just keep getting assigned to the wrong kind of missions, Luminara. You ought to press the council for something more exciting. It'll be good for your Padawan." He punched the controls for the doors, and they went out into a hallway that seemed a little too empty for Obi-Wan's comfort. He had been gone for a while now, but he doubted that in 3 years, the temple had lost enough of its population that even temple guards and security droids had vanished from one of the few areas of the temple that non-Jedi were permitted to wander around unescorted. It could have been coincidence. There was another visitor wing in the North Spire, though it was smaller and older than this one, and mostly had been used for etiquette classes when Obi-Wan had been a Padawan. "You've got a Padawan now," he asked Luminara. She nodded. "Only for about 3 months. She is 9 years old." "Young, but not that young." Obi-Wan had been older, but Quinlan had been younger. "Mary Allen, and already showing signs of a healing talent. She isn't ready for the kind of missions that Quinlan drags poor Ayla on." Quinlan shrugged. "Ayla can handle herself," he said. "She wants to see you again if you have time." "I'd like that," Obi-Wan said, Quinlan's teenage Twi'lek Padawan was sharp as a tack and wickedly clever. Though the last time Obi-Wan had seen her, she had had a tendency to pull her punches, both literal and metaphorical. Obi-Wan guessed that without any major incidents to hold her back, she would take her trials within the next 5 years, and undoubtedly pass with flying colors. "Hela's spent too much time with you," Luminara told Quinlan, smiling to take the sting out. "It's ruined her mind. Such a pity." "I'll tell her you said that," Quinlan grinned. "And I'll stick to boring if the alternative is the kind of missions you get," Luminara said. "Tell Obi-Wan about that mess on Nalhutta." Quinlan winced as Obi-Wan turned towards him and arched his eyebrows. "Face me. Has everyone in the temple heard about that?" "Well, it's such a good story," Luminara said. She grinned at Obi-Wan. "It's not every day a Jedi Knight nearly gets married to a hut." "Quinn, I had no idea you swung that way," Obi-Wan said, and laughing, ducked Quinlan's cuff at the back of his head. Once they left the visitor's wing, they started seeing more Jedi, though there were far more knights and masters than Obi-Wan remembered, and almost no younglings or Padawans. Even out in the mid-rim, Obi-Wan would have heard if a large portion of the next generation of Jedi had been killed, so he suspected they were merely being kept out of his way until he had left the temple. Obi-Wan didn't know why the Jedi would feel that way about his return, but it seemed the most logical explanation. Under normal circumstances, it was impossible to go 10 feet in the temple without tripping over at least one youngling, and usually half a dozen, since at that age Jedi tended to travel in packs. He didn't ask, because he didn't want Quinlan and Luminara to lie to him. Or worse, tell him the truth. Instead, he was updated on every fragment of gossip that had passed through the Jedi Temple in the past 3 years. Though his own resignation and that of Master, now Senator, Dooku, was glossed over. When even that had been exhausted, Quinlan and Luminara moved on to reminiscences of mishaps on assignments, of which Obi-Wan had a few from the past 3 years to contribute that didn't reveal Queen Amidala's true identity or violate Naboo operational security. Quinlan and Luminara accompanied him all the way into the turbolift in the central spire, settling in on either side of him as it began to rise toward the High Council chamber. Obi-Wan caught his lower lip between his teeth, nerves beginning to get the better of him for a moment. Luminara was telling a funny story about her Padawan, Barriss Offee, and a group of younglings she had been shepherding through one of the temple obstacle courses, but her eyes cut sideways towards him. Quinlan laid a hand on Obi-Wan's arm, sending reassurance through the Force. Obi-Wan nodded slightly in response. The lift doors slid open, depositing them in the small anteroom outside the council chamber. Obi-Wan blinked when he saw the temple guards standing on either side of the double doors. Knights, anonymously robed and masked, carrying archaic double-bladed yellow lightsabers. They moved to block the doors as Obi-Wan, Luminara, and Quinlan stepped out of the turbolift. "Your weapons and any communications devices must remain here, Captain Kenobi," said one of them. Twi'lek, by the accent, Obi-Wan tentatively identified. But her hood covered her leku, so he couldn't be sure. Quinlan looked like he was about to protest, but Obi-Wan just nodded. He'd actually managed to forget for the half hour or so it had taken to get from the speeder bay to the central spire. The Jedi Temple was larger than anyone gave it credit for. That he wasn't a Jedi anymore. But of course, no one but a Jedi would be allowed to go armed in front of the High Council. "I'll take them," Quinlan offered quietly. Obi-Wan hesitated in the act of taking his lightsaber off his belt. Quinlan had the Kefar Force talent of psychometry, which meant that he could read the history of objects he touched with his bare hands. His training as a Jedi made his psychometry considerably stronger than average for a Kefar Guardian. Since Qui-Gon's murder and Darth Maul's death were somewhere in the history of Obi-Wan's lightsaber, it could be rough on Quinn.
You sure?
I can handle it. Obi-Wan nodded and passed Quinlan his lightsaber, then handed over his sidearm and began the complicated process of disarming himself of all his holdout weapons. He hadn't even considered that the Jedi Council wouldn't let him into the chamber armed, otherwise he would have limited himself to his blaster, lightsaber, and bracers, instead of the usual gear he carried for a day in. Instead, he unsheathed his boot knives, those he passed to Luminara instead of Quinlan, since he had cut more than a few throats in the past few years, and there was no need for Quinn to see that. Then added his holdout blasters, the vibroblades sheathed at the small of his back, and up his sleeves, and the electromagnetic pulse chips and stun grenades he carried in his belt pouches.
What happened to blasters or crude, uncivilized weapons?
Quinlan asked, as Obi-Wan stripped off his bracers, which, aside from having an insect comm link, also packed a small electrical charge in the left, an EMP in the right, and a few other tricks.
Or, a Jedi doesn't need any weapon but his lightsaber, for that matter.
Sometimes the occasion calls for crude and uncivilized, Obi-Wan said, adding the secure comm link that connected directly to Padme, and an experimental droid deactivator they had found in his pocket. He hesitated for a moment over his anti-surveillance jammers, then shrugged and slipped them off too, even though they hadn't been explicitly mentioned.
And I'm not a Jedi anymore.
Which was the whole point of this particular show.
Forgetting anything?
Quinlan asked, as Obi-Wan paused to pat himself down and hold up the data chip he'd brought for the temple guards to inspect.
Thermal detonator? Rocket launcher? Tank?
Left them in my other shirt, Obi-Wan said. He turned to the temple guards, raising an eyebrow.
May I?
This time they stepped back, allowing the doors to slide open. Obi-Wan caught Quinlan's encouraging nod and Luminara's smile in the instant before he stepped inside and the doors shut again. He hadn't seen the High Council since they had left Naboo 2 years ago in the wake of the liberation. He hadn't been in the council chamber itself since he and Qui-Gon had been assigned to return to Naboo with the Queen. It was the first time he had been in front of the full council by himself. The membership hadn't changed since the last time he had been here. Obi-Wan swallowed nervously as he strode to the center of the chamber and bowed, the formal Naboo-style bow of a senior military officer to a group of ranking civil officials. The general mood in the force was curiosity, with a little concern from Yoda and Ki-Adi Mundi, and hostility from a few of the others.
Masters, thank you for seeing me on such short notice.
He hadn't transmitted his request until they had arrived on Coruscant, and even then had gone down into the city and done so from a public holocom on one of the lower levels, so anonymous as to be virtually impossible to track. There was no telling what the council had thought of that, but at least they had agreed to the meeting. Obi-Wan had been lucky. All the members of the High Council had been on planet at the time. He didn't know if that was coincidence or not, since he had seen at least three of them in the courts during the trial, along with several other Jedi who weren't on the council.
"Always welcome here you are, young Obi-Wan," Yoda said, which caused a faint tremor of disagreement in the Force. Obi-Wan couldn't tell who it came from.
"Desire to speak with us, you do?"
"I do, yes," Obi-Wan said, letting his gaze flicker around the room. He wasn't keen on having his back to part of the council, but that was just paranoia.
"It's about a matter I feel is critical that the Jedi Order be informed of. Her Royal Highness agrees with me."
Several council members exchanged looks that he couldn't read. Mace Windu glowered at them, then said,
"Continue, Obi-Wan."
Obi-Wan clasped his hands behind his back, feeling naked without his lightsaber and holdout weapons. He'd forgotten how it felt to go unarmed, even though he was perfectly capable of defending himself with nothing but his bare hands and the Force. He'd killed none with less. He shouldn't even be thinking about that here in the council chamber at the heart of the Jedi Temple. But he couldn't stop himself. Too much of his past life had been taken up with worrying about security, about threats and eliminating them, and about protecting the Queen, to be easy among people who were now, at best, uncertain about him. About 6 months after the occupation of Naboo ended, I received a tight beam transmission on my personal comm link, he began. It was audio only, no visual, and so distorted that I couldn't even identify whether the speaker was male or female, though I later discovered that it was male. He told me that he was a Sith Lord, the master of the assassin that we know as Darth Maul, and that he was looking for a new apprentice to replace Maul. All of a sudden, he had the attention of every Jedi Master in the room, the Force thickening and sharpening around him. Obi-Wan had been privy to that kind of concentrated focus before, but only once, and it still made him shiver, because his instincts screamed, "Threat! Threat!" and he had to consciously fight to keep from reacting with the Force, either defensively or offensively. He flicked a glance at Sy-C-Teen and Eeth Koth, who were regarding him with even more suspicion than they had previously, and continued. Over the next year, he continued to contact me via encoded tight beam at irregular intervals. Eventually, he switched from audio only to holograms. He held up the data chip he'd brought with him. I've brought copies of all the transmissions. At a slight gesture from Windu, the holoprojector rose up from the floor beside him. Obi-Wan slid the data chip into it, pulling up a still from the first hologram he'd received. Though he could have used any of them, since they were all virtually identical. The figure that appeared was cloaked and hooded, all his features obscured except for his chin and his pale, spindly hands. Obi-Wan clasped his hands behind his back again. Eventually, he told me that he was called Darth Sidious, and that he was the latest and last in a line of Sith Lords that stretched back a millennium to Darth Bane. I killed his old apprentice. He was looking for a new one. He arched an eyebrow at the reaction this got. I believe murder is the traditional form of advancement among the Sith, if my history lessons are anything to go by. Apparently, I caught his attention. Sidious seemed to think that a Jedi who had left the Order would be susceptible to the enticements of the dark side. That definitely got a reaction, and Obi-Wan couldn't stop himself from shifting his weight to a more defensive stance as several counselors moved their hands closer to the lightsabers. Windu and Yoda didn't react, to his relief. The council generally followed their lead. I tried to trace his transmissions through the holonet, but they had been bounced across every relay in the midrim and expansion region, so I wasn't able to pinpoint the signal's origin to any place more specific than the core worlds, and I'm not even sure about that. He flicked a glance at Even Pyle, one of the masters whose hand was resting casually on the hilt of his lightsaber. This Darth Sidious told me that he wanted to meet with me. I agreed. Why? Sy-C-Teen demanded. Obi-Wan turned to look at him. Because I wanted more intel than I was getting from his transmissions, he said, matter-of-factly. Whether or not Darth Sidious has anything in common with the Sith of the Old Republic, he is certainly a Force user. Darth Maul was skilled enough with a lightsaber to kill an experienced Jedi Master. He didn't have to say Qui-Gon's name. Everyone on the Council knew who he was talking about. His ghost had been haunting Obi-Wan since the royal yacht had touched down on Coruscant. When is this meeting to take place? Ki-Adi-Mundi, one of the less openly hostile Jedi in the room, inquired. He was probably already mentally putting together a strike team. Obi-Wan glanced at him. 2 months ago. This is a matter that should have been brought to the High Council immediately, Sy-C-Teen said. Why wasn't it? Because, respectfully, Master Teen, I'm not a Jedi anymore, Obi-Wan said. He waited a moment to see if there were any other questions, but there was nothing anyone could say to contradict that. Obi-Wan wasn't a Jedi anymore. He didn't owe allegiance to anyone except the Queen of Naboo, especially not the Jedi High Council. They all knew that there wasn't even any reason for him to give them this courtesy visit, not after the way he had ended things with the Order. Where was this rendezvous? Plo Koon prompted after a moment of awkward silence. Mustafar, Master Koon, Obi-Wan said. It's a small volcanic planet in the Outer Rim, mostly owned by the Techno Union, though several other parties also own properties there. Although there is a native species, it's almost uninhabitable by galactic standards. The mining and mineral processing facilities there operate under regulated conditions and extremely tight shielding. The location I was given was in one of these processing facilities, though it was otherwise empty at the time. He was aware that he was falling into the same speech patterns he had used to give reports to Qui-Gon and the Council when he had been a Padawan. But there wasn't really any way around that, and it was the quickest way to get the information across. I took an N1 starfighter, and went alone except for my astromech droid. Only the Queen knew where I was going. When I reached the rendezvous point, I sat down on the shielded landing platform outside the facility and went inside. I could sense him in the Force, Obi-Wan said slowly, and couldn't hide his shudder at the memory. He had a darkness to him like nothing I've ever felt before. Like flying too close to a black hole. A force of nature that wanted to devour me alive. The only comparison I have is Darth Maul, but he only wanted to destroy. Sidious wanted to consume. He changed his mind abruptly. Sidious wanted to possess me. He acted as though he already did. Much evil there is in the galaxy, Yoda said softly, which Obi-Wan already knew, but was nice to hear from him anyway. Obi-Wan nodded in response, and took a moment to get himself back together. He had spent the past 2 months turning over every detail of what had happened on Mustafar, but afterwards he needed a stiff drink, an hour with a punching bag, and a long, hot shower. Padme was starting to worry. One of the reasons she had supported his going to the Jedi Council on this was because, as she had said, he needed to pass it on to someone better equipped to deal with it. Someone whose job it actually was to deal with the Sith. R2-D2, my astromech, had only picked up one life sign in the processing facility, he said. I went in. It was still operational, but it had been completely cleared out, probably a few days previous. The shields that protected it from the lava flows were being generated from within the facility, so it wasn't abandoned. Sidious was there. He was waiting for me to be in the right spot. Then he triggered a set of ray shields to keep me there. After what had happened to Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan still flinched at the sight and hum of ray shields, which he somehow had the feeling Darth Sidious had known. Nobody knew that, though. Not even Padme. I didn't get the impression that he thought I needed much convincing, Obi-Wan said slowly. As far as he was concerned, I'd already turned from the light side of the Force when I left the Order. He gave me some of that, about how he would teach me things that the Jedi were too afraid to use, that I'd have more power than I'd ever dreamed of before. I'd be able to do things that the Jedi never told me about. He didn't bother to see what the reaction to that was. Mostly, he told me about what he already had in place. He told me that he already had thousands of Republic senators under his sway, that the Republic itself would soon fall and a new Sith Empire would take its place. He wanted a new apprentice to fill Darth Maul's place, a powerful apprentice who only needed to be trained in the ways of the dark side and not in the Force itself. He told me that if I joined him, I wouldn't just have a place in his new empire, I'd be at his side.
So would Queen Amidala. We could have our revenge on the Trade Federation, on the Senate, on the Jedi, for the way Naboo had been treated during the occupation. We would have power. Real power. Even with the Supreme Chancellor from Naboo, they didn't have any real sway in the Senate. The Queen's decision to turn down the conditional government aid after the occupation had seen to that. We could have our retribution. He shut his eyes for a moment. He didn't care about power, or force tricks, or ruling the galaxy, but that? Vengeance for everyone who had died during the Trade Federation occupation. For Qui-Gon, and Sashe, and Yane, and the tens of thousands of civilians and security volunteers. For the Senate's casual dismissal of the Federation, and the situation on Naboo. That had been tempting. Retribution. He couldn't tell if he had wanted it for Padme's sake or for his own. Answer him, did you? He blinked and raised his gaze to look at Yoda. I did, he said. I told him that it was a tempting offer, and I'd think about it.
Why did you say that?
Plo Koon asked, before anyone else could, managing to convey polite interest instead of the hostility Obi-Wan sensed from some of the other counselors.
For one thing, I didn't want to die,
Obi-Wan said, which received a few scowls, but others just nodded. Obi-Wan was willing to die for a lot of things, but neither his pride nor the Jedi Order were included among them. I couldn't get out of the ray shields without calling my astromech to come and set me free. I didn't want to antagonize him enough to kill me outright. I didn't think there was anything to be gained by telling him I'd die before I turned to the dark side. That got a stir of attention, because apparently Darth Sidious wasn't the only person who thought that a former Jedi would be easy to turn to the dark side. That hurt more than Obi-Wan had thought it would, even though he had come prepared for that reaction. The Jedi Order was not exactly understanding of those few who chose to leave its ranks. Obi-Wan wondered if Senator Dooku was treated likewise, or if the fact that he had been a master instead of a Padawan when he had resigned granted him the benefit of the doubt. Sidious told me that he would be in touch with me, and left. Obi-Wan continued after a moment. Once he was gone, my R2 unit came in to free me from the ray shields. According to him, Sidious had left immediately in a small single-person shuttle. My starfighter's sensors lost track of him when he left atmosphere and jumped into hyperspace.
Will you give us the coordinates for this facility? Plo Koon asked. A closer survey may prove interesting.
The coordinates are on the data chip, Obi-Wan said, nodding at the holoprojector next to him. But I'm afraid you won't find much there, since I dropped 2 proton torpedoes on the facility once I returned to my starfighter. There was a moment of stunned silence.
Why? Adigalia asked bluntly.
What did you hope to accomplish by this action?
Obi-Wan shrugged a little sheepishly.
I wanted to make a point, and I wanted to make his life more difficult. I thought blowing up the facility might do that. I did my best to trace the records, but ownership was routed through more than a dozen shell corporations before I hit a dead end with the Techno Union. I'm a decent slicer, but I'm not good enough to get into the Techno Union systems.
We have slicers who can do that, one of the counselors said.
Did this Darth Sidious contact you again? Ki-Adi Mundi inquired. A week later, after I'd returned to Naboo, yes. He said that he was impressed by my initiative. Obi-Wan let the Force show the Council what he thought of that. I told him to go to hell. I didn't want anything to do with him. I didn't want anything to do with the Sith. And if he ever came to Naboo, I'd gut the Master the way I did the Apprentice.
This time, Obi-Wan could sense definite approval from most of the masters. Though Eethkoth said, "You should have strung him along until you came to us. We could have set a trap for him and put an end to this once and for all."
"I'm coming to you now," Obi-Wan said. "I wanted to be certain that I had proof before I brought this before the Jedi. Respectfully, masters, I have no obligation to be here."
"Why did you come then?"
Windu asked. This time, Obi-Wan let himself grin, showing his teeth.
"Is it not the purpose of the Jedi to hunt the Sith?"
"And you just told us that you aren't a Jedi anymore. Why did you go after him on your own if it isn't your job?"
"Because it is my job to investigate threats to Naboo and to the Queen," Obi-Wan said. "You've seen our records of the Occupation Council's interrogations. Darth Maul didn't come to Naboo in the middle of a planetary invasion just to kill Jedi. And he didn't come just to play Federation attack dog. Because if he had, the Occupation Council would have used him to wipe out the Gungans and the Naboo resistance before we arrived. I talked to Newt Gunray and the rest of the Occupation Council while they were in our custody. They were afraid of him. I know that the working assumption has been that he's nothing more than a mercenary with some force training and a lightsaber, but people like Gunray aren't afraid of the hired help. They don't employ beings they don't think they can control. I've gone through the interrogation hollows dozens of times since they were made. I know what the Nemoidians said and what they weren't saying. And I know the Trade Federation. They only believe in one thing, profit. According to our contacts inside the Federation..."
Mace Windu's eyebrows shot up. Apparently, the Jedi hadn't known about that. Obi-Wan flicked a glance at him, arching an eyebrow in return.
"The decision to blockade Naboo wasn't a unanimous one, but it was one that a majority of the Directorate agreed on. There's precedent for a blockade, even if before 3 years ago one hadn't occurred within living memory. There was never a vote for an invasion. Half the Directorate wasn't even informed that it had taken place until Gunray's troops had already taken control of the planet. Rumor is that Newt Gunray and his party in the Federation were jumping to someone else's orders. Someone powerful. Someone dangerous. I'm sure you're aware of the shake-ups in the Trade Federation Directorate that made Newt Gunray a viceroy, but now that Gunray is no longer in power, some members of the Federation, particularly the non-Nemoidians who were pushed out of executive position 4 years ago, are willing to talk to the people who brought Gunray down."
"We haven't heard anything about this,"
Adigalia pointed out.
"Take it up with Master Thom, Master Galia," Obi-Wan said. Quinlan's former master and immediate superior was a Jedi spymaster. "Without going into details, we learned that Gunray's ascension was ensured by someone outside the Federation. Most of the executives I spoke to didn't know who, but one of them said that Gunray had been dealing with a ghost."
"A ghost?"
Windu sounded doubtful.
"The Sith," Obi-Wan said,
which got the Council's attention again. "I'd give you her name, but she died in an accident 2 days after we spoke. After that, the others stopped talking. The Sith are a Jedi boogeyman. They're not the monster in the closet for anyone but us. Most sentients don't know that they survived the end of the new Sith Wars. Most sentients have never even heard of the new Sith Wars," he allowed. "Why else bring up the Sith? Darth Maul was never publicly identified."
"Believe you do that the Sith were behind the invasion of Naboo?" Yoda asked. "But to what purpose?"
"I don't know," Obi-Wan said. "Naboo isn't strategically important. We're resource-rich, but no more so than 1,000 other systems in the Republic. There are 12 other worlds that the Federation could have chosen to blockade, most with more cause than Naboo. I don't have any hard evidence. We have the hollows from the interrogations."
"Those were supposed to be turned over to the Senate," Eethkoth remarked.
"The Senate got copies. We still have the originals.
For some reason, Her Royal Highness doesn't trust the Senate, Obi-Wan said dryly. From the looks he got for that response, he suspected that the Jedi Council blamed him for that, too. They weren't technically wrong, since he had been the one to tell Padme what the Senate was planning for Naboo before the Supreme Chancellor had gotten a chance to spring it on her. I'm shocked to hear that, even Pyle said dryly. For a moment, amusement at his tone tugged at Obi-Wan's mouth, but he didn't let himself smile again. Aside from the Hollows, we don't have any hard evidence, and even those are mostly circumstantial. My instincts tell me that the Sith wanted the Trade Federation to invade Naboo, but I have no idea why. If I knew, I would tell the Council. I did ask Sidious. He made a comment about Newt Gunray, but not enough to prove anything. What does Queen Amidala think? Windu asked. The Queen trusts my judgment on this matter. Disturbing news this is, Yoda murmured. Concerned about the return of the Sith we have been, but no proof have we had. The fact that they didn't have Darth Maul's body, just the security holos from the plasma refinery, probably didn't help. The only reason Obi-Wan had been able to identify him as a Sith instead of as just another dark Jedi was because he'd taken a class on the Sith of the Old Republic when he had been a Padawan. I assure you, Master, Obi-Wan said. They are very real. The Jedi considered him silently. Obi-Wan looked back, his hands clasped loosely behind his back, and met them stare for stare, which went against every instinct he had. He had been a Jedi for a long time. It was hard for him, even now, to look at the members of the Council and consider himself their equal. In danger, believe yourself to be, Yoda said at last. If the Sith want to kill me, they're welcome to try, Obi-Wan said. It didn't go very well the last time. Windu and Yoda exchanged an unreadable look. Then Windu said, How is Queen Amidala? Obi-Wan tensed without meaning to. Considering the circumstances for her visit to Coruscant, Her Royal Highness is well. She's eager to return to Naboo. And you, young Obi-Wan? How are you? Obi-Wan considered Plo Koon, who had asked that question. I'm content, he said. Do you miss the Order? Sometimes. Do you want to return? The questions were coming from all sides. Obi-Wan turned to face each speaker, keeping his expression carefully impassive and his answer short. No. You haven't considered it. No. What does Queen Amidala have to say about your visit here? She advised me to come. Do you still follow the code? Does Senator Dooku get these kinds of questions? Obi-Wan said, instead of answering. I was raised as a Jedi. I was trained as a Jedi. I have fought and bled and nearly died for the Jedi for more than 2 decades. If I was to turn to the dark side, I would not have told you about the Sith. There was a long moment of silence. Then Plo Koon steepled his hands together in front of himself and said, I find myself wondering once again, young Obi-Wan, why it is that you left the Jedi. Obi-Wan eyed him. Plo Koon had been one of Qui-Gon's best friends. They had gone on numerous missions together when Obi-Wan was still Qui-Gon's Padawan. Obi-Wan owed him an answer, at least, even if it wasn't one that he would like. I no longer believe that this order is capable of serving the people of the Republic. The tension in the room, already close enough to make the Force shiver, immediately ratcheted up. At last, Mace Windu said, Thank you for bringing this matter to our attention. You can go now. Stone-faced, Obi-Wan bowed and left the chamber,
leaving the data chip where it was in the holoprojector. The temple guard stood back for him, then returned to their places as the doors slid closed behind him. He was unsurprised, though relieved, to see that Quinlan and Luminara were still there, sitting on one of the padded benches meant for Jedi waiting to go before the council. Obi-Wan's pile of weaponry was between them, with his comm links and anti-surveillance jammers set slightly to one side. He expected that Quinlan had gone through the ladder, either out of his natural curiosity or on Thulm's orders, but there was nothing to find that Obi-Wan wasn't all right with either of them knowing. They looked up as he emerged from the council chamber. "How did it go?" Luminara asked. Obi-Wan considered the question as he began to rearm himself, checking his comm links to make sure that he hadn't missed any messages while he'd been with the council. "I've no idea," he said at last. "They have the information that I came here to bring them, and a bit that I hadn't meant to. Whether or not they believe me..." He shook his head, leaning down to sheath his boot knives. Quinlan's gaze tracked the motion, making Obi-Wan wonder if he'd used his psychometry on them and seen the beings whose throats Obi-Wan had slit. Federation officers during the occupation, Naboo dissidents since, all in situations where he couldn't use his lightsaber or a blaster. He hated doing what work, but he was trained for it, unlike most of security forces on Naboo. All Quinn said, though, was, "It must have been bad to get you back here. All bets were on you staying with Amidala the entire time when we heard she was coming to Coruscant." "I'm on planet for Nuke Gunray's trial. That's all," Obi-Wan said, sliding his holdout blasters back into their holsters and straightening his jacket. He dumped the EMP chips and the miniature stun grenades, no larger than the chips and only good for a few minutes on most species, back into his belt pouches, then began to sheath his vibroblades. "I don't actually need to report to the council anymore." "Maybe not," Luminara allowed. "But you did anyway." Obi-Wan shrugged in response. He pulled his bracers on and fastened them, checked the charges out of habit, then finally holstered his sidearm and clipped his lightsaber back to his belt. "It was important," he said finally. The two Jedi exchanged unreadable looks as Obi-Wan pressed the call button for the turbo lift. They fell into place on either side of him as the door slid open, but no one spoke again until they had begun their descent. "Are you needed back with Queen Amidala?" Quinlan asked. Obi-Wan considered him. "Not immediately. Why?" "You want a spar? Might make a nice change from deflecting blaster bolts and hacking up our battle droids, or whatever it is you've been doing." "Mostly deflecting blaster bolts and hacking apart battle droids," Obi-Wan said. "I'd like that." Quinlan nodded, his expression pleased. "What about you, Luminara? You up for a couple rounds?" She smiled. "Always." They ended up in one of the smaller, out-of-the-way training rooms. Obi-Wan shed his holdout weapons for the second time at the side of the room, changing into a borrowed set of Quinlan's workout gear. He could fight in the sunwear he'd come to the temple in, but he didn't want to if he didn't have to. He caught the practice lightsaber Quinlan tossed him, igniting it with a flick of his wrist and making a few passes to get a feel for the hilt. The blade was blue, like his old lightsaber. He didn't know whether Quinn had chosen it for that reason, or if it had just been the first one he'd picked up out of the pile. It was the first time Obi-Wan had sparred with another Jedi in 3 years, not since Qui-Gon had been killed. He might have been shocked at how fast Quinlan and Luminara both were if he hadn't been fighting commando droids on and off for the past few years, except that commando droids couldn't use the Force. Obi-Wan got thrown into a few walls before he remembered how to compensate for that. By the time his bracer comlink started beeping frantically a few hours later, all three of them were sweat-soaked and laughing, covered in bruises and a few scorch marks even from the powered-down practice lightsabers. Obi-Wan deactivated his borrowed blade and stepped aside from Luminara and Quinlan to answer his comlink.
Kenobi.
Where in blazes have you been?
Gregor Typho, the captain of Padme's security detail, demanded.
I'm at the Jedi Temple, Obi-Wan said. What's happened? Is the Queen safe?
Her Highness is fine. Tell me you have an alibi for the past 4 hours.
I've been here with a pair of knights who haven't left my side except when I was with the Council. Gregor, what's going on? Why do I need an alibi?
At this, Luminara and Quinlan both glanced towards him.
The judge for Newt Gunray's trial is dead,
Typho said grimly.
Senate Guard found him about half an hour ago. The Federation is blaming you.
Of course they are. Why would I kill him? Obi-Wan demanded, ignoring the looks he was getting from Luminara and Quinlan. Everyone thought he was going to rule in our favor.
Because he was killed by a lightsaber.
Obi-Wan stared at the comlink blankly.
A lightsaber?
That's what the blues said.
There was a burst of sound in the background. Obi-Wan caught the timbre of Padme's voice, raised in outrage. Then Typho said,
You're at the Jedi Temple? I'm sending a squad there. The Senate Guard's on their way to arrest you.
Tell the Senate Guard that I'm not the only bloody person on Coruscant with a lightsaber, Obi-Wan said indignantly. They can't arrest me just because I carry one, no matter what the Trade Federation thinks.
I'll tell them,
Typho said grimly.
I don't think they'll listen.
Well, then they can take it up with a Jedi when they get here, Obi-Wan snapped. Her Highness is all right? He checked again.
Yes, I've doubled her guard, but I won't be comfortable until you're back here.
Neither will I, Obi-Wan said. I'll tell Temple Security our people are on their way. Have them call me when they arrive. Kenobi out. Fighting back his outrage, some of which was professional rather than personal, when Obi-Wan assassinated people, he did it for a good reason, and he didn't use his lightsaber, which any idiot should have known. He turned to Quinlan and Luminara, who had been listening to the conversation and were both frowning deeply.
I hope you're willing to vouch for me to the Senate Guard, he said. They seem to be under the impression I'm capable of murder.
Somewhere in the mid-rim, present day. The Jedi consular-class cruiser Paladin was still nestled in the belly of Resolute, though they would break away from the rest of the fleet when they were back in Republic space and return to Coruscant on their own. For now, still deep in Separatist-claimed space, it was smarter to stay with the fleet. Both Resolute and her escort, and the remains of the Trade Federation fleet that had survived the engagement at Naboo. The Jedi Council had decided that Paladin's cargo was not only too valuable to be associated with the wayward Trade Federation fleet, but even to be revealed to the Republic sailors crewing Resolute and her escorts. Quinlan Vos wasn't sure that he agreed with that decision, but no one had asked him. His boot heels clicked on the Durasteel floor as he made his way past the security hatches to the most secure of the holding cells old Jedi cruisers were equipped with. Plo Koon's Padawan, Ahsoka Tano, was there, sitting cross-legged on a meditation mat in front of the cell's humming ray shield and reading something on a datapad. She looked up as the last hatch opened, then scrambled to her feet. Master Quinlan!
Hey, Ahsoka, Quinlan said. He say anything?
She shook her head.
He moved?
He's just sitting there. I don't think he's moved at all. I'm pretty sure he's still breathing. Quinlan studied her earnest young face, then said,
Why don't you take a break? Go check on Organa and Gunray. I'll watch him.
Ahsoka hesitated for a moment, then nodded, rolling up the meditation mat and collecting her datapad. How long will you be? She asked, practical.
I'll calm you when I'm done here, Quinlan said.
That must have been acceptable, because she nodded again and made her way out past the security hatches. Quinlan waited until the last one had shut behind her, then went and got one of the uncomfortable metal chairs from the other side of the small room, turning it around in front of the single ray-shielded cell. He straddled it, resting his arms on the chair back, and studied the cell occupant.
Obi-Wan Kenobi didn't make any indication that he had heard the exchange. He was sitting tailor-style against the cell's back walls, his hands resting lightly on his knees and his eyes closed. His face was still bruised from his fight on Ba's pity, his neck scraped raw from the slave collar Gunn Ray had put on him in hopes of controlling him. He had been given medical treatment and a change of clothes. Quinlan hadn't been the one who decided to give him Jedi robes, but he couldn't say that he would have done any differently if it had been his decision. Sooner or later, the psychological effects of being back in the Jedi uniform would get to Obi-Wan, but right now he just looked completely tranquil. "Obi-Wan," Quinlan said, "I know you're alive in there." Without opening his eyes, Obi-Wan said, "What do you want?"
"To talk."
"I don't believe we have anything to talk about."
"Don't pull that Fergalutz with me, Obi-Wan. We've known each other since we were younglings," Quinlan said.
Obi-Wan still didn't look at him. "What do you want? My name, rank, and serial number?"
"You know my name. My rank on Naboo is Captain of the Queen's Guard, which makes me the highest-ranking military officer in the system. My rank in the CIS military is General. My serial number is..."
"I don't care about your serial number, and I don't care about your rank," Quinlan said.
"Then I don't believe we have anything to talk about."
"I know you didn't kill Luminara and Eeth Koth."
Obi-Wan opened his eyes. He watched Quinlan warily for a few moments, his whole body tensing as if preparing for combat. At last, he said,
"What makes you think that? There's holographic evidence to the contrary, after all."
"Some tech on Coruscant worked out that the footage was digitally generated," Quinlan said, watching his reactions.
"That? And that there were two different broadcasts sent out from Theta at exactly the same time, one to Separatist systems, and one to Republic systems. Not exactly Amidala's style, don't you think?"
Obi-Wan shut his eyes again.
"How interesting.
So either you and Her Royal Highness decided to start sending mixed messages, which doesn't seem likely considering how fond of transparency in government she claims to be, or you've got a traitor in your camp."
When Obi-Wan didn't respond, he added,
"Where are Luminara and Eeth Koth?"
"Perhaps you should have asked Queen Amidala that when you were busy charging me with murder and high treason," Obi-Wan said.
"Are they still alive?"
"I really couldn't say."
"So they are alive," Quinlan said. "Why lie about it?"
Obi-Wan didn't answer.
"You didn't do it," Quinlan decided. "So the traitor thing, then. It wasn't us. Was it the Alliance or someone else in the Confederacy?"
No reply.
"You don't know."
Amidala wasn't universally popular among Separatists, which included not only the Confederacy, but what Quinlan privately thought of as their evil twin, the even less organized Alliance of Sovereign Systems. There were even those on Naboo who disapproved of her rule. The Republic had quietly been sponsoring dissidents in the system since the occupation ended, much to the Jedi Order's distaste.
"Why not come right out and tell us?"
Obi-Wan still didn't say anything, but his amusement at the words reverberated in the Force, making his thoughts clear.
No one would have believed them.
"Ship Luminara and Eeth back to us and we would," Quinlan said. "Right now, we don't even have proof of life to trade you for them."
"You know the Jedi Council will never let me go," Obi-Wan said, without opening his eyes.
"Well, that was something."
Quinlan leaned forward and said,
"That's the Supreme Chancellor's call, not the Council's. Come on, Obi-Wan, give me something to work with here. The entire damned war is based on you killing or not killing Luminara and Eeth. Will Amidala trade them back to the Republic for you?"
Obi-Wan opened his eyes.
"Yes," he said after a moment. "They're no good to us. But you'll forgive me if I don't trust anything the Republic says. Since last I saw you, you were dropping bombs on Naboo."
"That was the Trade Federation, not the Republic,"
Quinlan said.
Really? It's so hard to tell these days.
Funny how your mouth moves, but Amidala's words come out, Quinlan said. So Luminara and Aether still on Naboo.
Obi-Wan flicked a glance at him, his expression impassive.
Obi-Wan was good enough not to slip up, which meant he'd known he was handing Quinlan the knowledge of their survival.
I really wouldn't know, he said. I haven't been home in a few days.
Does Bail Organa know they're not dead?
Bail knows.
Prince Consort Organa's in a lot of trouble, you know, Quinlan said. Bail Organa had given up his right to be called Senator when Alderaan had seceded. What's coming could be very hard on him.
Obi-Wan shut his eyes again, apparently relaxing at the change of subject.
Bail's not in your jurisdiction, and Dooku's not going to do anything to him. What makes you think that?
Because putting Bail Organa of Alderaan on trial would be political suicide, Obi-Wan said.
He can swing Alderaan going over to the Confederacy. He can't swing putting the Prince Consort of Alderaan on trial for high treason.
Quinlan studied him silently, then finally said,
And here I thought you hated politics.
I've been in the service of the Queen of Naboo for 12 years now. Politics is a little hard to avoid.
Even though he'd caught the slip before vocalizing it, the words still hung unspoken in the Force, and Quinlan saw Obi-Wan wince at the realization.
You're married to Queen Amidala, Quinlan said slowly.
Don't worry, Obi-Wan said, his blue eyes cool and calculating. I didn't expect you to send flowers to the wedding.
You're married to the woman who would have let Newt Gunray put a blaster bolt through your head and keep dropping bombs on her planet?
Obi-Wan actually smiled, his affection warming the Force.
It's hard to find the perfect woman. I wouldn't expect a Jedi to understand.
That's because a Jedi would choose saving lives over political ideals, Quinlan said.
And that's why I'm not a Jedi anymore.
Obi-Wan's smile fell away, his face going serious.
There are some things worth dying for, Quinlan.
I won't disagree with you, except on the specifics,
Quinlan said, shaking his head.
That's one tough lady, Obi-Wan.
That's why I love her.
He shifted his position and ran a hand back through his hair, considering Quinlan through the red glow of the race shield between them.
I won't betray her.
Quinlan leaned forward, resting his forearms against the back of the chair.
I'm not asking you to betray Queen Amidala. You and I have the same counter-interrogation training. I know there's nothing I can say or do that will get you to talk, let alone turn on her.
Nothing you can do, maybe, Obi-Wan said. I know there are masters in the Order who could crack my mind like an egg.
Quinlan frowned.
We're Jedi. We don't do that.
Keep telling yourself that.
Obi-Wan tipped his head back against the wall.
I used to believe in the Jedi Order, Quinn. In the code. We were so damn self-righteous when we were kids. Do you remember that? So certain we were doing the right thing.
We were, Quinlan said. Or at least I was.
Obi-Wan rolled his eyes and glanced upward at the ceiling.
Protect the weak, serve the Republic, defend the innocent, obey the Council. No emotion, no desire, no attachment, no passion, no death.
He shook his head.
You and I both know that the last is a lie.
Death is a natural part of the Force, Quinlan said.
It's hard to believe that when a 15-year-old girl is bleeding to death in your arms after a commando droid has clawed her apart,
Obi-Wan said.
when bombs are falling all around you and innocent people are being blown to pieces too small to bury. When you're digging through rubble trying to find the child you can hear screaming before he suffocates. His gaze went back to Quinlan. When a Sith Lord rips your own master open while you watch. Qui-Gon Jinn was my friend too, Quinlan said. That wasn't strictly true. It was his former master, Tholm, who had been Qui-Gon's best friend. But he had known Qui-Gon, had trained with him and Obi-Wan when Tholm had left on solo missions. Obi-Wan shook his head, but Quinlan sensed that it didn't have to do with him. His mind had gone somewhere else, dragged back into the horrors he had seen during the occupation of Naboo. Quinlan caught a flash of his memory in the Force. Battle droids pushing their way through a weakened section of the Theed City shields, his lightsaber moving in a green blur as he deflected blaster bolts. The high, thin keen of a girl screaming in agony, blood pouring over his hands as he tried to hold it together with the Force. He could still feel it between his fingers, sticky and hot, as he pulled himself out of the shared memory. Obi-Wan was looking down at his lap, clenching and unclenching his fists. After a moment, he blinked and looked up. All those rules, he said. His voice was steady, if a little distant, but he made a nervous gesture with his hands, as though trying to wipe blood off them. How can anyone obey all those rules and still pretend to understand the rest of the galaxy? We hold ourselves apart from it and tell ourselves that it makes us better, makes us impartial. But all it does is make us less than human. We can't protect the galaxy if we don't even try to understand it. We? Quinlan said quietly. Obi-Wan's gaze flickered up towards him. He blinked twice, rapidly. You, he said. Old habits died hard, Quinlan supposed. Obi-Wan might not be a Jedi anymore, but he had been in the Order for 2/3 of his life, twice as long as he had been on Naboo. And he had still been a Jedi during the occupation of Naboo. Visibly rattled, Obi-Wan swept a hand, his knuckles skinned and starting to scab over, back through his hair. If you truly believe that the Jedi will balk at cracking my skull open and stripping my mind bare, then you're a fool. Quinlan frowned. That's more your style, isn't it? We're Jedi, Obi-Wan. We don't do that sort of thing. We never have. Forgive me if I find it difficult to put anything past the people who sent assassins on 3 separate occasions to kill my wife, Obi-Wan said. Quinlan stared at him. What in blazes are you talking about? We're Jedi! We don't assassinate people. Luminara and Eeth were there to extract both of you and bring you to Coruscant, not to kill you. You'd know that if you'd talked to them. Or if you'd thought about it for 5 minutes, Kenobi. I'll grant you Luminara and Eeth Koth, Obi-Wan said after a moment. But the others? Those were assassination attempts. I know. I was there. Obi-Wan, I'm only going to say this once, Quinlan said slowly. On my oath as a Jedi Knight, this Order has never sent assassins to kill Queen Amidala. The High Council would never order it. No Jedi would accept a mission like that. As far as I know, the only time that the Council has even sent Jedi to Naboo in the past decade was 2 weeks ago. And that was an extraction-only mission, not a kill mission. We don't do that. It's against everything we believe. You know that. So what in blazes are you talking about? He didn't see Obi-Wan move, but all of a sudden he was on his feet, prowling close to the ray shield. The red shield cast strange shadows on the hollows of his battered face, accentuating his bruises and illuminating the now sutured gash on his forehead. He was frowning. About a year ago, the Queen and I were on Malastare, trying to come to terms with the blasted alliance again, Obi-Wan said. We were attacked by a woman, cloaked and robed as a Jedi. Or in a variation on the uniform, he allowed, which Quinlan thought was generous on his part, wielding a blue lightsaber. I fought her off. I thought she fell to her death, but when I went to check, there was no body there. She must have been only wounded. He caught Quinlan's gaze and held it. Only another Force user would be brave enough to do that to a Jedi. Most people couldn't meet a Jedi's eyes for more than a few seconds at most. 5 months ago, he said, on Pantora, we were attacked again. Another Jedi. A masked woman. Two lightsabers, blue and green. He pulled up his sleeves to show a slashing, shallow scar that stretched from midway up his forearm to his elbow. It must have been only a glancing blow not to have taken off the arm entirely. She was good. I'm better. You killed her? Obi-Wan shook his head. Padme stunned her. The Pantoran guard took her into custody, but she escaped the same night. I assumed she had an extraction team on site. Did you see her face? The blasted guard showed up too quickly, and Chairman Chicho claimed jurisdiction since it happened on Pantoran soil. The Queen was going to argue him out of it in the morning, since she was the one targeted, not him. Obi-Wan tucked his hands behind his belt buckle and eyed them thoughtfully. You didn't know about this. Quinlan considered him, wondering how much to tell him. Do you have any proof? There's security footage from the second attack back on Naboo, Obi-Wan said after a moment. Or you can check with the Pantorans. Good luck with that. Not only was Pantora separatist, it was even further from Republic territory than Naboo was, a Runian colony world out on the Outer Rim. The Jedi would probably have more luck begging the Hutts for help. Or you could just take my word for it, Obi-Wan said. The Queen could also vouch for it, of course, but under the circumstances... Sit spit, you're testy, Quinlan remarked. I've been beaten, I've been tortured, I was nearly shot in the head in front of my wife, and then I was arrested for something I didn't do by the people who think I'm the latest incarnation of the ultimate evil. What kind of mood would you be in, Quinn?
When you put it that way, Quinlan allowed.
He hadn't moved from his seat, though he'd tilted his head back to look up at Obi-Wan when he stood.
Did you try and have Master Yoda killed? Obi-Wan blinked, startled.
No. Why would I do that? Yoda's been trying to get me back in the Order for years. He's about the only one, but...
He cut off, staring at Quinlan.
What happened?
Someone lured Yoda out from the temple using your name and put a lightsaber through him.
Obi-Wan's shock reverberated in the Force, his expression horrified.
Is he alive?
Quinlan studied him.
Yes, he said after a beat. Injured, but alive, last I heard. We'd already left Coruscant when it happened, on our way after you.
Obi-Wan sank down on the foot of the cell's narrow cot. He shook his head, looking shaken.
It wasn't me, he said. Do the words Obi-Wan Kenobi sends his regards mean anything to you?
Obi-Wan snorted.
If I was going to assassinate the Grand Master of the Jedi Order, I wouldn't stamp my name on it, he said. And I'd do it myself without any theatrics, and I wouldn't be stupid enough to do it with a lightsaber. Do you know who did do it?
A woman, he said.
With a red lightsaber.
Obi-Wan was on his feet again in an instant, close enough to the ray shield that it buzzed at the proximity. The glint in his eyes was bright and vicious, the Force crackling with power that made the lights dim and the ray shield waver for an instant. Quinlan found himself on his feet, reaching automatically for his lightsaber. Obi-Wan was stronger in the Force than he was. As a Padawan, he'd been unsure in his abilities, but the rival of many knights in sheer power. He had 13 years more experience now, and had traded in the Jedi Code for something less confining. The Ray Shield might not be able to keep him back, Quinlan knew, and found himself looking for the emergency alert near the hatch, judging how many strides it would take him to reach it, if he could trigger it with the Force. If he kicked the chair at Obi-Wan, that might buy him a second or two. But Obi-Wan didn't move beyond that first instinctive lunge. He clenched his fists at his sides, for all intents and purposes looking like nothing so much as a caged beast with its prey in sight but out of reach. It wasn't hatred that Quinlan saw in his eyes, but the same single-minded ferocity that any Jedi might have had when confronted by their antithesis. Sith, Obi-Wan spat, the word itself a curse. I told you they were back.